You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and back for a second episode in a row, Henry Abbott. How are you, sir?
Can't get enough, Gerard. Let's do this.
All right, Henry. I joked on last Thursday. I was like, well, what are we going to talk about on Monday? All-Star, are we going to watch that? I was like, let's talk about European football, which we did this morning on our call. So that's fine. I got my European football talk.
I dialed in a little late. David's out of town. And like the fact is, it's 100% lock. Like Travis and Gerard are talking about Zidane and Maradona. It's like, true. There's no other way it was going to go.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's what I say. We like football. It's fun. It's good sport.
No shame in it.
Yeah, no shame. But the All-Star was this weekend, Henry, and it is, I put in our document, the crown jewel, in quotes, of the NBA's broadcast. And it is, because when they sell their broadcast rights package to their various partners, Turner and ESPN and ABC, this weekend is a huge part of it, right? Because of, in theory, the ratings and eyeballs it draws. Now, we know from data that is publicly put out there, not that great. Ratings aren't fantastic. And that spawns a litany of pieces, mainly by our brethren in media, about this game is terrible. We have to fix it. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, guys, like all this hand-wringing. Like, I don't know like what you want to do. Like, bottom line is, this weekend isn't going anywhere, but we do need to have some tweaks to it. And I think, you know, as True Hoop, we should probably have an elevated discussion about this.
Thank you. Elevated discussion is what we would like to do. Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah, I think it's mostly only a big deal because of the schedule, right? The Super Bowl was last weekend. Mm-hmm. This is the moment that the NBA was inviting the casual fans who make this a successful business. They're inviting them to pivot to basketball, right? So you want to put like a big showy, you want to like bang the drums and, you know, mm-hmm. have the whole symphony play, whatever. And so that the world feels permission to pivot to this sport. And like at that particular thing, it's, you know, it's just not a great TV product, right? Like it's just, a lot of years I just don't watch it at all. This year I just felt like I felt like for my job I should like watch the dunk contest. Like it's a weird, I'm like a 49-year-old man alone in his living room on Saturday night, like watching like Mac McClung pull Shaq out of the audience. Like the worst. It's literally, and the father of a theater student, right? And like, yes. Like I've seen a lot of theater. Like mm-hmm. this was just, they didn't even fucking rehearse. Like no one knew their lines. It was like, oh my gosh, he's getting Shaquille O'Neal. It's like, nobody's surprised. There's not a child on planet Earth who thinks that was spontaneous, right? Like sometimes you can see the stage manager, like mm-hmm. the person who's wearing the headset, like literally on camera, be like, no, you go here, you go there. It's like, it's just very poor theater.
Yeah.
Like this is what we're doing. This is the like, yeah. Like, did you see what Mahomes did last weekend? Like, this is our answer to that. Is like,
I agree. Yeah, I mean, first of all, you summed that all up so well because you're like, what child is actually getting shaded? And then you did the raspberry. That's what children do. That's what they would say. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. I have a million options to watch on a screen. You want me to tune into this thing?
Yeah.
No chance. And Henry, that's part of the problem too, right? So. You know, born in 78, that's when I was born. So like the All-Star game to me, like 80s, 90s, I remember it. It was my chance to see the star players who I didn't see all the time on the NBC, you know, triple header and all that, right? Yeah. So sans Michael Jordan, all the people who were regulars, Patrick Ewing, da-da-da, all that. Oh, all the Utah guys. Oh, these guys at Golden State seem kind of fun. Like, but because there was no league pass back then. I couldn't, none of that. You wanted to watch those guys in the 90s, you saw a SportsCenter clip or highlight. So that's what was so great about it for me. But even that's gone now, because if a kid needs wants to go see what Victor Wembanyama is doing, I don't need to wait for this. I can just pull it up on my phone and watch whatever I'm doing on YouTube or on House of Highlights or whatever.
That is a great point. And I think also when I was a kid, I was like, oh, well, this is just a chance to see the best of the best, right? That's right there in the name, right? All-star game. But I think it's increasingly, until, you know, and I was kind of a sucker, I guess, right? Like, you know, that's like, and I don't really like that feeling of like people will go for this, right? Yeah. This is like, yeah, I don't know. Like, this is like when you start looking at the ingredients of a Twinkie and you're like, are the people who sell us this, are they our friends? Like,
the fact that it could last on a shelf for 20 years should tell you everything you need to know. Nope, they are not your friends.
They discontinued that sucker, didn't they? You know what I mean? Like, that's the lesson right there. And actually, part of me was like, okay, I have been covering this league for pretty much my entire adult life. And every year on this day, we do this, right? We're like, this is wrong. This would be better. And then, my new attitude this year is like, I'm not sure it matters if it's not fixed. Like we don't even need it. Like, if it's either it matters. If it matters, then it's because children are falling in love with the game by watching it, in which case the numbers will be good and we're fine. Mm-hmm. If they don't fix it, then the pain is felt by ESPN. Mm-hmm. Really only. No, like, no. Arguably the league for not having its marketing reach.
Or Turner, who has it, TNT. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, as ESPN, yeah. Most of my life, but yeah, Turner. ESPN has the celebrity game drug. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Friday game. Yeah, they got that. Yeah, they got that good one. Yeah.
It's hard to say which one's bigger. Yeah,
and that celebrity game might have been more fun. I don't know.
Yeah, Turner, as you point out. So Turner. So really, it's ultimately like, okay, well, this will be a hit in the pocketbook of a giant corporation, or it won't be. So like, I'm not like dying over here over how that plays out, right? It's like, you know, They're going to sort of foolishly wear out, exhaust the best players in the world who were already exhausted before the weekend starts.
Yes.
That's too bad. I'm really sorry. Like, I wish that we could have Giannis fresher next week. You know, I really do. I wish he'd been in the Bahamas this week. I really do. Like,
I'm with you because, first of all, part of it too is, right, everyone assumes, oh, yeah, also, and the players say it. Everyone's, it's common parlance. It's like, you know, when something becomes accepted in language, and that's not what the word actually means, but we just say it and it is. Everyone goes, oh, yeah, can't wait to start the second half of the season. I'm like, no, dudes, you got 27 games left. Ain't no second half of the season. You've already played 2/3. Like, you guys are pretty wiped at this point. I agree with you. A week off in Hawaii, wherever. Don't even touch a ball. Just go enjoy yourself for a little while. That's what these guys needed. I joked on the call this morning. Yeah, Giannis was freshest October 15th. That's when we should have had this game.
You can see it in the data. Like, that's when he's running fastest, jumping highest, like, for sure. And there's a little part of this, like, I think the reputation, as I gather it, is that the players are just partying, and that might be happening. There might be some of them drinking and some carrying on late at night. But I think that was undeniably true in like 2001.
Yeah.
You know, like the league at that time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, it was a little more prominent than 4 a.m. These players now, like, I mean, Thorpe will tell you, he had a bunch of players who literally wouldn't have touched a single drink all season.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And or some who'd have like their rule with like one glass of wine or whatever, and not night before game day, right? So I think that there's another factor to this, which is, I'll just describe. I think the first time I went to an All-Star game was 2000. Could that be right? It was in Golden State, and we were making I was working for a magazine, and we were arranging a photo shoot. I'm pretty sure that we were trying to get you try to arrange like Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan on the cover together. This is the weekend that you do it. Mm-hmm. And it's usually Friday. So like Friday, the players are going through all these little stations. The NBA has charged a fortune to all these media outlets to like be part of this circuit. And they're going to bring you the all-star of your choice for your 15-minute increment for a radio interview, or they're going to be whatever. They're going to do this whole car wash thing. Which meant that I'm pretty clearly remember the Golden State Warriors PR guy, who's still the Golden State Warriors PR guy, like standing by him as he's holding, I don't even remember which star he had there. It might be like Jason Richardson or something, who's having his photograph taken. And I can see that all-star scheduled for the day as dictated by the NBA, right? This is NBA time. It's literally like sun up to sundown. Like, this dude is just traipsing from one thing to the next. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, I'm exhausted looking at it, right? It's like going... Yeah. To business court. None of this is exercising. None of this is lifting weights. None of this is getting stronger. None of this is
resting,
ice bath, or getting some sunshine. It's all just hotel suite after hotel suite after hotel suite. And like, I would want to just go to bed at 5 p.m. that day, you know, without any sports. So like, to me, this is, the league has a lot of leverage to make players do that. Mm-hmm. And they're using that leverage to exhaust them. And then on Sunday night, the players look exhausted. And it's like, that's an issue. You know,
agreed.
I'm sorry you beat him up. You know, like, sorry you got him here all spent.
Shout out to Warriors head of PR, Raymond Ritter. Yes, as Henry mentioned, has been doing that job for quite a long time. One of the best in the biz. No, you're right, Henry. And so the league makes them do all those things. And then on top of that, they have their things they have to do
right.
with either their foundation, if they've got a deal with Nike, Adidas, whatever, that activation. And so you play
their a game. Their agency has a brunch, and then there's like a tech summit, and there's the Players Association has a party. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you got to go and you cannot be a superstar in this business while skipping all those things. You got to represent. You got to show up. You got to go shake the hand of the chairman of the watch company that might be giving you a deal, right? You got to go like, this is your chance to hobnob. When Karl Malone skipped it, right? Yeah. He was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do All-Star. And the NBA came down super hard. I forget what the punch was, but it was mega hard. So he did fly in. And then I had a friend who was at, like, there's a very exclusive NBA official sponsors. You know about the NBA officials, right? This is like, at that time, it was only 12, I think. They would allow, there's like one beer sponsor and one sporting goods sponsor. Mm-hmm. The NBA officials have like a very swanky thing. And they were like, Karl Malone at that thing is like the most charming person in the world. Right? And this, I think, might be the point of All-Star Weekend for the business's bottom line, right? Because like, there's a few CEOs, a few bigwig sponsors from marketing people who really, really, really matter to the NBA. And the NBA is just like, it's time to perform, Carl. It's time to perform.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta hop.
You gotta be on parade. People. No, the best and brightest have to be on parade. I mean, that's really what All-Star Weekend is, right? It's why it's never gonna go away, because it is important to the league's bottom line. Again, those partners Henry mentioned, you know, LeBron, Steph, KD, those three especially have to go shake hands with these people. And right, like, that's just what matters right now until they're done. And then it's Tyrese Halliburton and whoever the next crop is coming up right behind them, and Jokic and this one and that one. That's their job. And
LeBron's mostly like, I'm going to hobnob with people that are doing business deals with me.
With me.
Right? But then he's like, not today. Today you're going to hobnob with people who's doing business deals with me. Right? Like, that's what's going on there.
Yeah, a little tug of war, man. And it's, you know, and these things matter, right? Because we're always about, we want the players at their best. So if you play a game Thursday night, which quite a few teams did, you're finishing late. You're flying in late Thursday night. So you're getting into Indiana early Friday morning, 2-3 o'clock. You're getting a couple hours of rest. And that first thing is like 8 or 9 o'clock, and you're ready to roll. And it's like, guys, this is, and it's all day, as Henry mentioned, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it is what it is. Henry, one of the things that also happened over the weekend was we had a record scoring performance of the All-Star game. A team scored over 200 points, which I guess 200 is a number that makes people uncomfortable. I don't know. Like, it's just, that was it. That's the number. And everyone collectively, by everyone, I mean our brethren in the media, lost their minds. We've got to play better defense. And I'm like, but it's a game by definition that's not real. So how do you presume that they would play better defense? And then you get all the, well, they used to. I'm like, I challenge you, besides that 2001 game in D.C., to find me a game where it was so close that, yes, in the fourth, everyone guarded up like they were serious. I watched a lot of All-Star games growing up, Henry. I don't remember a whole lot of defense being played in those games. That's just not what it was.
They are throwing it off the backboard, and they are catching it in midair. Like, that's what it's supposed to be.
Right. Like, it's because you're trying to excite people and all these cool things we can do. Anyway, so it was a lot of questions in Adam's press conference about the defense and lack thereof in the league right now. And this is a problem. And I'm like, guys, I don't think that's it. I think it's a little more nuanced than that. I think the skill level is so high, as we often mention so many times on this show. And that in and of itself makes it very difficult. And as David will say time and time again, listeners of the show, if a team's going to make 43s, I don't care what, you're not winning. Like, you're just not. The math ain't mathin', as the kids say. And that's, you know, the East was hot from three. West wasn't. Game over.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of, like, did you ever go to the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah.
So, like, you know how that looked? Where it was kind of like,
You know, Washington Generals.
The Washington Generals, right? Like, I think that's what you see a little bit when you see 211 points. You're just like, oh, it was the Globetrotters, right? It was like, it was like, you know, just kind of silly, right? And I think there's like, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was the NBA Finals. I didn't watch it. I don't even know. But to me, like, I, until we solve the, like, delivering the players to the tip off ready to go.
Right.
Like, I don't want to hear about it.
Correct.
Like, it seems like every single problem the NBA has, the answer is the players need to do more work. And it's like, bro, you could do blood tests. Mm-hmm. You could do saliva tests. You could do jump tests. You can do all kinds of assessments. I'm telling you, the players who've been playing day in and day out are wrecked. That's your fault. You made this insane schedule and you cooked up a very shoddy little report saying that it wasn't a factor. It is a factor. And like, mm-hmm. and they're not lazy. They're tired. And like, you know, and then you gave them a gift of like a long weekend of
in
planes
Indiana.
and like just a crazy long hours of a trade show. Like, you know, like, well, maybe there are other problems too. Maybe there's a problem in the format of it and the ULM ending and the whatever, the rules and the incentive structure and the money. Maybe we need to fix that. But first of all, get athletes being athletic, right? Like, no one's ready for that now, right? Like,
get athletic people to be, that seems to be the first thing. Let's do that. No one was looking at all that athletic this weekend.
And threes are what you shoot when you're tired, right? This is like, I know this, right? Like, if I wanted to, if in some very weird universe, I were hired to organize like a fun game for like a grade school around here, like I would try to just find shooters, because without the athleticism, we're not going to have dunkers, right? Like, like the most fun thing Damian Lillard can do is just jack it from half court. So guess what he did? He jacked it from half court.
He sure did.
One of them went in. So like, amazing.
Quite a lot of them went in for Damian Lillard as he won All-Star Game MVP. No, you are so right on this, and you're hitting the nail on the head. And, you know, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, of course, has his press conference here. And, you know, this is one of the two times a year where he does like a big kind of like State of the Union thing, right? Where he answers questions from all these MLB media. It's at the finals, and it's here. And he was asked about, Henry, and it's kind of related to this, right? Because what we're talking about is these guys are not, we're delivering them to a product that means something to the NBA at the worst possible time. They're exhausted and broken up and not in good shape. And it ties into the 65 game rule, which these players have to play in order to be eligible for postseason awards and the postseason and the all NBA teams and all rookie and all that, which, by the way, isn't just some awesome moniker to have, which it is. That also depends on if they get max, super max money. And so these things matter, right? Okay. So Adam was asked about the 65 games, and he says, you know, we have to wait until the end of the season to look at it totally. But, you know, I think he did say, and I know you read the transcript as well of his press conference, that, you know, injuries are down. And I'm like, but what does that actually mean? Injuries are down. Like, that's a very broad statement to say. Injuries are down. Well, based on what? Like, based on what criteria? Yeah. Based on what are you looking at?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Like, it's hard to find an issue where the NBA doesn't give like the impression of data, right? The impression of evidence-based decisions, but, you know, they don't actually, like, if they were driven by this, they would put forth a scientist, mm-hmm. right? Who would answer questions and say, like, this is the right way to analyze this, right? And like, they don't ever do that. Like, you won't find an example of that. So they just kind of, they're data-esque at the NBA. Right, like they know they're supposed to have data, and so they say they have data. And if you want to see the data, they will flip you the double birds, right? Like, they're just like, ain't no way you're seeing the data. Like, I've been through this personally many times. Like, it's a playbook for sure, right? Yeah, Adam's not going to tell you what his data is.
So you have to just trust us that the data is exactly what I'm telling
That's
you.
That exactly it is. The phrase, yeah. And it's outrageous. This is the other part of their game. It's outrageous. To think that, like, you know, I'm suggesting they're lying? Is that what, like, how dare I, right? Like, that's like the mood. It's like, no, man, I just thought we'd do it like people do when they're doing it for fucking real, which is you present the evidence. Like, I thought we would do that, you know?
But I love
it.
I love it.
Want to do that? Okay. Yeah. So actually, I'll give a little example sort of on this topic, on the scoring anyway. Mm-hmm. So Adam said, in response to a question he knew was coming about scoring being up, right?
Wait, really quick before you go that, isn't it so great how Adam just seems to have the perfect answer lined up for every question? It's kind of a great skill.
It's good. So he said that scoring's up about a point a game.
Right.
And it is true. That's true. I looked it up. I didn't believe him. I mean, I didn't take his word for it. Yeah. I mean, I expected he'd done his homework, but I did look it up. It's actually a little under a point on average. But I was like, well, that's averages are a little screwy because, you know, it could be that like the whole league is playing a slower pace, or it could be that there's more teams tanking this year, or it could be that stars are injured, et cetera, right? Like, so, so just as a little like core sample, I'm not saying this is the be all and end all assessment, but like I looked at like the 10th scoring team this year compared to the 10th scoring team last year. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a bigger difference. So 10th last year was the Jazz, 115.8. Oh, here's the other thing. There's a different number of timeouts every, I mean, of overtimes every year.
Yes, correct.
So totals get a little screwy, they right? Do. The number of minutes played. So you got to look at points per 100 possessions, right?
You see that, Henry? You're already giving too much context here, Henry. Yeah. 1 point, that's all it is.
Yeah. So if you look a little, like the 10th team last year was the Jazz, 115.8 points per 100 possessions. This year it's the Clippers, 118.3. Mm. It's 2.5 points up in 1 year. If we had a graph of all-time NBA scoring, like that's a spike for sure. And if you look at like, you know, why the 10th team? Because I just, it's like, that's a competitive team. That right. That's sort of the tanking, but it's not like, so just for fun, I also looked at the 5th team, 3 points up. Ooh. I didn't take notes on that one, but just trust me. Okay. So 3 points up. Meanwhile, to my ears anyway, this question isn't coming up because I know people who are super alarmed at these numbers. I don't think people even know these numbers.
Correct.
What I see happening is people are alarmed at the highlights of insane calls, right? Like where the offensive player is like basically like pulling a pin from a grenade and throwing it into the defensive players, and the defensive player is now dead, and they're like, what? Foul on the defender, right?
Like, exactly.
Like, that's what it looks like this year. Right? It's just like insane stuff. David can talk about it more knowledgeably, but he's basically advising his players just don't touch the driving player, correct. Right? Just don't touch
hands
him
behind your back.
All. Sometimes you can not touch him and still get called for the foul.
You will.
What feels different to me is that, right? Like, and this is what players are talking about. This is what coaches are talking about. This is why coaches are bringing laptops to post-game press conferences to fucking show this, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the issue is about. That's what the question is about. And Adam Silver knows it, but he gives this, oh my God, like,
scoring is actually only up 1 point, and the NBA is not trying to favor offense.
And he never said the word referee in this answer, not one time. And then he said, I know there's some coaches who feel that we've hampered in some ways defensive players' ability to play defense, at least the way it used to be played in this league. In part, that's been very intentional. There was a period of time in this league when people thought the game had become too physical. And we'd taken away some of the aesthetic beauty of the game. I was one of those people that felt that way in the 90s. Okay. I've been covering this league that entire time. That was a great thing. That was more than 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. They changed the rules. Mm-hmm. And it was a great success, right? This is when the Knicks were ugling up the game. And it was literally, like, they call it like the Dick Carter rule behind the scene because they like just had this way of just grabbing everybody. And they got rid of that. And that was great. That has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about today.
Yeah, correct.
It's a giant misdirection, smoke bomb, ridiculous. Like, what are you talking about, Adam? You guys changed the rules 20 years ago in a way that has been well understood, well legislated.
Correct.
And the people who love those new rules are outraged at you right now because of the new rules, which are no one can touch anybody when they're playing D, right? Like,
correct.
That's what Steve Kerr is mad about. Right?
Yeah.
It's not this shit from 2001. What the fuck that was.
No.
Sorry, I'm cursing a lot today.
No, listen, I love it. We're on a roll here. No. We're on a roll. It is, look, it is true. We all know it. Studies show it. The amount of skill present in the NBA today in 2024, by far greater than any period in the history of this game. I don't want to hear about Pistol Pete and none of that. No. Absolutely. Nobody but played back then is as athletic as the 15th player on a roster today. It's just, that's how evolution in science works, okay? All right. So we got a bunch of skilled people everywhere. All five people can shoot past. It's like, holy hell. So
totally true.
That makes defense harder now because instead of, oh, I don't got to worry about that guy because he can't really do much with the ball, I got to worry about him and I got to worry about that guy. If he gets beat, I got to cover for my teammate. It's a lot to process. By the way, everybody's bigger, faster, stronger. The court dimensions have stayed basically the same, which is problematic, right? But in a way, they've changed because you have people who shoot now at 38 to 40 feet. So I have to go out and guard that far, which now means there's a bunch of space that people have to cover behind me. It's a lot of torque and wear and tear on the body. And that point about the hands, you're right. Hand checking was legislated out a million years ago. Like that, it isn't about that. The play I'm going to reference happened Indiana versus Boston. Andrew Nembhard, a very good young defender, second year in the league, strong in the chest. Jaylen Brown's trying to get by him. I've watched that play on slow-mo a million times. He cannot get through Andrew's chest. He's just saying, hands are way out here. And Jaylen is like, fuck it, I can't get past this guy. So he goes up for the shot, loses the ball because of Andrew's big, strong chest. Guess what happened? Foul, Andrew Nembhard. And Andrew's like, wait. I'm not touching him. I'm just standing here, and he can't move me. Yeah, well, it's a foul on you. Well, that's what I think a part of what a lot of people are complaining about.
And so, you know, everything you said about how the game has changed is true. Every possession, both ends of the court, all the time. And it's beautiful. It really is. Like what's so sad is that we're arguing about like shitty parts of the game. It's the peak basketball, as Kevin Durant said. It's like the most beautiful basketball. Like, I saw Dominique Wilkins was basically saying like, oh, we had our bodies conditioned to get fouled. So like, I would average 35 easy. It's like, no, you wouldn't. There's one little wrinkle where it's easier today. But the fact is every defender is bigger, stronger, faster than everybody who tried to defend you. And they would eat you alive. Like, or you'd have to evolve. Maybe he would evolve. But he didn't face athletes like this. He didn't. And it would blow his mind. Right. So, to me, the little much more specific concern here are the, like, I don't know, I'm gonna make it up, like 8 calls a game that are a little bit kind of mind-blowingly in favor of the offense, which cause everybody to be hands off all game long, right? Like, I don't think free throws are way up, but I think that shooting is up because everyone's got a little more room. Well, the stars do anyway, right? Well, like,
for sure.
You know, I think that that's what's happening is once David Thorpe is telling his clients, as are lots of people, just like, hey, whoa, you know, hands off. Don't play regular defense is what they're saying. Like, well, now that does bring up scoring a little bit, right? My favorite play, Gerard, was there was one, oh my gosh, maybe 10 days ago, the Blazers Nuggets. And high pick and roll. And Jokic sees that he's going to be guarded by Scoot Henderson. But Scoot's like a little slow. Scoot's kind of in the middle. And he literally just grabs his arm and is like, you will guard me. And like, and just pulls him over so that Scoot's like between him and the hoop. And because he's a rookie and Jokic is the MVP. So this is how referee works, right? So he gets his rookie, his smaller rookie. And then he's put him like maybe too far away. Like Scoot ends up a yard from Jokic. And then Jokic gets the ball. And the instant he touches it, he just, Scoot gets in perfect, like, take charge position, like my 8th grade coach taught us. And then Jokic literally just, like, aims his left shoulder and just pile drives like it's rugby. Like, boom! Sends Scoot. Scoot actually landed outside of the gymnasium. He flew out of the building. Because Jokic knew before he even touched the ball that this was going to be a foul on Scoot. And, like, that's what we're talking about, Adam. What's your answer to that question?
Ref games. That was the title of Thursday's show. These are the ref games that the players play. Yeah. No.
And this is the only time we get to see Adam, like, take questions. Could we get a fucking journalist in the room? Could somebody ask a hard question? Like, could somebody be like, no, Adam, I'm not talking about Dick Harter's defense in the 90s. I'm talking about this play. Like, why does he have to be so insulated from that, right? Like,
yeah, it's you know, this is just a point where we're at, right? And all of this is about the delivery of the product, right? And so every time we mention or one of these things comes up, it's sort of obfuscating like the bigger thing, right? It's like, oh, the players we need more effort from them. It's like, no, you're getting plenty of effort. That's not the problem, right? Like, it's, oh, well, scoring is actually only up a point. No, we just talked about it. Let's dig into that a little bit. This isn't what we're talking about. Like, no, let's get deeper and nuanced here. We don't, let's not show them anything nuanced. Let's just, larger point is this. This is the story we want to tell. Move on next. And, you know, people just accept that that's what it is. And we here at Troop are like, but that's not really the story, guys.
Like, well, I guarantee Adam's worried about it. I guarantee he's thinking about it. I guarantee he's had phone calls and meetings about it, right? Like, and in a normal world, he would just have to kind of, like, earn his credibility on this topic from kind of putting a little daylight in there. That's what journalism is, right? That's like, this is how it's supposed to work, right? It's like, we're supposed to believe more in Adam because we've seen his thought process through these tough things. Like, I think if you're like, Stern was a much stronger leader in this sense, where he's just kind of like, you know, like, he would say a lot more stuff. Right. And sometimes you'd be more vulnerable, sometimes you'd be less vulnerable, but you'd have a lot more of a window into it. Mm-hmm. And like with Adam, I think they seem to have a strategy with Adam of just like, we mustn't let him look weak. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they have you know, it's a little harder for journalists like me to get in that press conference now. You know what I mean? Like, David didn't mind. David was happy. He loved these hard questions, right? Like, yeah, he loved to fight, right? Like, but so it's not the mood.
It's, you know, we talk about personality types, right? So David clearly, no one would say this about, it was not a shrinking violet, right? Like, personal confrontation was not a problem for him. Total. You might even argue he quite liked personal confrontation.
No question he did. Yeah. No question.
And with Adam, we're like, maybe not. He seems more of a, let's get consensus and everybody agrees and kumbaya. And it's like, well, I think you need both, right? To be an effective leader, I think.
I mean, there's different things, right? It's like, you know, this is like the Godfather, like he's a wartime consigliere or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like Stern was a wartime consigliere, correct, right? And like, and if he didn't have a war, he would just make one up, right? He would just like, let's go fight somebody, right? Like, let's just go fight somebody. Adam is not a wartime consigliere, at least not in public. God knows what he's like behind the scenes. The scariest part of the whole deal is like, like we just don't know what's happening that matters at the NBA. Like, you know, if Mark Cuban's was livid with Stern, they fought in public.
Yes.
Right? Someone's living with Silver now? Well, I'll never know. I'm sure it happens every day. It's all just, we're not really covering what matters at the NBA. Like, we just talk about kind of drivelly
transactions
like,
and
Mac McClung. It's like, you know, this is not the heart of the matter. You know what I mean? he's not even in the NBA.
Where are you on a player not even in the NBA? I love it. This is. Oh, man, this is too good. All right, guys, we'll be back after this short commercial break. This is too good, Henry. This is, we're arguing. You're right, though. Like, what does it matter if Matt McClung's a dunk contest or Jacob Toppin? Who cares? That's irrelevant.
Sprinkling on top of nothing. You know?
So we have the ability to see data of what's popular and what works, right? And I would imagine, without having seen the data, that from this weekend, I would guess the highest rated thing was the Stephen Curry, Sabrina Ionescu 3-point showdown. And I'm only gathering that based on the excitement of it and the kind of conversation online. And we'll get into Kenny the Jet Smith's idiotic comments after. But I mean, these two friends decided, hey, let's go against each other head to head. Because remember, Sabrina had the WNBA record 3-point all-star contest win. She scored 39 points, something like that. She was unbelievable. And we're like, oh, let's see her go head-to-head with the greatest male shooter of all time, right? And Stephen Curry. And Henry lived up to the hype. It was great. Going into his last rack and his last two shots, she was still ahead. He had to knock down the last three to win. And I thought it was outstanding, a really excellent thing. And geez, who knew, as you said on our call this morning, the thing we've never done before is probably the most popular shock of all shocks.
Yeah. Because it felt like, you know, by the time they're, you know, doing their very staged things in the dunk contest, right? Like, that feels very inauthentic, right? Yes. And this felt like, I felt at the very least, like Sabrina put herself out there, right? She's been, I don't know how old she is, but she's been working towards this moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure she's been kind of fantasizing about it since she was like 12, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing, but like, she had real stakes. She had emotional stakes. Like, imagine if she'd won, right?
Oh, like, it would have been nuts.
Like, she did, she would have done a thing for a whole gender, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And it would have been, that would have been the greatest thing that ever happened at All-Star Weekend, right? Mm-hmm. And she almost did, right? And so that the fact that it felt real and it was inclusive to like casual fans and even women, you know, felt like fresh and new and a step in the right direction, right? And to me, that was gave me a little sense of like, you know, the last authentic thing that happened All-Star Weekend. I think there was a year, this is before my time, but I think there was a year that the players refused to take the court without the league honoring their union, I think, is how the NPA first was invented.
Like, that's a big thing.
That was authentic.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember that. Yes, that was in Teresa's book, Blackball. Yeah.
This is whenever that was in the 70s.
Yep, sounds about right.
So that's like, woo, that puts a little bounce in your step, right? Mm-hmm. That's a zing of reality. And so this had a little whiff of that. So yeah, to me, like, I don't know. I'd be interested in your take. Like, is there a tradition of All-Star Weekend that's so important that we need to keep it just because it's a tradition?
No. I mean,
right?
Beyond the fact that what we talked about at the start of the show, which is this is important for the league and its partners, and beyond that, no. Like, to me, there's nothing. No. The game, the slam dunk, no. None of that. Not a thing.
We just need, like, what's the most fun stuff that we can come up with these players? And, like, Steph and Sabrina had a good idea. Like, I mean, we've been talking about this forever, but, like, what years ago I was advocating, I still think it would be really good. Basically, like, let's say you get, like, four players all mic'd up, and everybody has, like, $50,000 cash. And now it's just basically, like, just gamble. Like, just like I can do this. Can you just, like, make whatever deal you want to make? I like, I don't know how it plays out, but, like, someone's going to end up with all the money. Like, we go till someone has all the money.
And they're competitive SOBs. And it's, listen, you're definitely going to have some not suitable for work language, but guess what? Like, listen, I mean, come on. Are we really, I think part of it too for me, Henry, is like, why do we feel like, but what about the children? Like, do you really think kids don't hear way worse or can find way if they want to get a hold of it? Then somebody say, "Oh, f that mother!" Like, really? Are we gonna really, like, wring our hands over that?
I did notice, like the pandemic did a lot of bad things, but, like, there was kind of like cursing on TV just kind of slid in through the back door.
right.
Now it's okay. Like, that was kind of weird. So anyway, I think it's fine now, Gerard.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. Yeah. It's whatever. Listen, I love the 3-point shootout with those. I hope they do more stuff like that. Now, part of the problem, again, is where the players are delivered in terms of the season and how they are healthy. I love the idea of you get all the courts set up and you do a bunch of one-on-one tournaments. Again, the problem is these guys are beat to shreds at this point. So, like, we're taxing them because they're going to go hard one-on-one against each other. Yeah. To advance. I know that for a fact. But, you know, they're going to risk injury. And that's also part of the thing too, right? Which is a large reason, I think, why you don't see what people want to see. They know we got 28 more, 30 more games to go. I can't tear an ACL in an all-star game. No.
Yeah.
So it's we have competing agendas here. It's tough.
I got the, you know, I guess my thinking on this really started the day that so we had special access to, like, the hotel for, it was the Vinsanity dunk contest weekend, right? And when Vinsanity had just kind of started, it was, like, a few weeks old that he just started, like, blowing minds, right? And he arrived at the hotel, and forgive me if I've told you this before on the podcast. I think maybe I have, but I was happened to be standing in this hotel hallway. There's a little place, like, as the players come in, they go into a series of rooms. And, like, in the first room, let's say they get, like, a credential and a schedule from the NBA and maybe their hotel room key. And then they go to the next room, and it's the Players Association, and they get, like, a gift bag and an invite to a party and this kind of stuff. Right. And they go to the next room and on and on. I was standing by maybe the first room, and Dr. Jack Ramsey, legend of the game, happened to be standing there. And somehow he knows Vince because basketball is a small world. And they have this really meaningful hug. And I'm standing right there. I didn't mean to be eavesdropping, but I was. And basically, Dr. Jack's like, "How are you doing?" And he's like, I just feel like I'm just running. Like, just running. I never feel like I can catch my breath. You know, I feel like I'm going all the time. And Dr. Jack's just like, keep running, you know? It's like, this is how it is, right? Like, I don't think, and then, you know, so that's how he felt. Probably that was Thursday, maybe Friday, before the greatest dunk performance of all time.
All time.
Like, what if he arrived saying, like,
"Oh, I feel great.
I'm fucking ready to go, man.
Oh, we might have seen something even crazier.
I'm about to put on a goddamn show." Yeah, right? Like, why wouldn't we have that? Like, why wouldn't we want him like that? Like,
I agree.
Bench him for a game against Sacramento or cancel that game entirely so that our players can do their best, you know?
You asked me before, what do you think is sacred about the All-Star Weekend? Then I said nothing. I want to amend that. One of the great things about All-Star Weekend is the players, the current players, and their ability to connect with the older players, the former players, and the reverential conversations that happen between the generations. I've been lucky enough to be at All-Star a few times. And like Henry, you know, when you're in the land of giants and you're 5'9", you often go unnoticed. And it's, you know, you can be kind of in the corner and they're like, "Hey, they don't see you." And you just hear the best stuff. And it's a language that, again, only they know. They know what it's like to play in the NBA. We have no fucking idea what that's like. And I love when they're able to do that. And you just see it all up through the generations. It's very cool. So that's the one thing I love about All-Star Weekend is that camaraderie the players have. I mean, unfortunately for fans, they don't really get to see that because that's just not how it works. But that's very cool.
That same hallway, actually, John Thompson was there. And, like, you could just see, I forget who, maybe Elton Brand. But you could just see, like, you know, just, like, there's some very meaningful things happening here, right?
Yeah, it matters to these guys, right? It is a fraternity. Like, as much as like they're competitors and like David says, they want to kill each other on the floor. Like, there is this brotherhood of like, we know what this is like. And like, yeah, you do.
Yeah. Nobody understands what they're going through.
Right? Nope. Like, no one. Yeah. I mean, we don't even, right? Like, and we try our best to be very like, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot.
It's not easy. I mean, this is where like, I think anybody who suggests that like, there's a lot of like loafing or whatever, like, right. Here's what happens if you're that guy. Like, you're immediately replaced.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, because we don't have to argue about the fact that there are roughly a billion people on the planet playing basketball, mm-hmm. and they all want your job. So, like, there's just at this bleeding edge here, yeah. you just don't get people who are, like, just smoking pot and reading
right.
the newspaper.
And don't
like,
give a shit and not know. Yeah. No. And that's the thing, right? So a lot of the conversations you hear about, well, we got to – no, it's not nothing to do with this. It's not about getting the players to try or care. No, they care probably too much, right? That's not the problem. Trust me when we tell you. That ain't it. That
is They're not binging it. Netflix. They're not.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
You had an interesting analogy, which I love. One of the things you do is just tell analogies about sport. Duncan, your son, is watching The Last Dance. It was for the first
right
time.
Now, as we speak. Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of binging Netflix, yeah, it's my kid. Yeah.
And you thought it was an interesting way to think about the All-Star game and what was happening in The Last Dance.
Yeah, let me see if I can stick this. Okay, so he's sick, actually, poor kid. So I took him a little, like, maybe hot honey lemon or something, mm-hmm. drop it off. And it happens to be a moment. It's a tense moment. I think it's the beginning of the second episode. Scottie Pippen is getting his ring, but he's in street clothes because he's holding out, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Maybe he's injured and holding out, I think mm-hmm. is the deal. Mm-hmm. And then they both play their first game after getting their rings. Right. And then there's Michael Jordan in the locker room, and there's a million microphones in his face. And you can hear the reporters complaining about, like, you're squishing me, whatever. You know? And anyway, so then first question is like, hey, well, you know, like, have you had a chance to talk to Scottie about his situation? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, you know, Scottie's got feelings, you know, like, we're all proud, like, you're playing this game, you want your work to be recognized, this kind of stuff, right? Next question is also about Scottie. And Michael's like, oh, are you gonna ask me another question about Scottie, or are we gonna talk about the game? and then the guy's like, well, what did you think about the game? And he's like, there you go. Mm-hmm. And so A, let's just acknowledge that's bullying. Like, okay, but B, this little crew of people with the microphones, I know that we like to shit on them, but like, this is what I do for a living, right? Mm-hmm. This is like, I have a lot of respect for journalism. And like, and what happened right there is it taps into a little something where Michael assumes basically that everyone in that little scrum is going to be there day in and day out, no matter what happens, right? But if you look at all the little mic flags and all those microphones, mm-hmm. like almost all those entities are out of business now. Mm-hmm. Like, they're gone, right? Why are they gone? Well, there's a lot of argument about that. I would argue they're gone because the content that they produced was too fucking boring. Like, you can see it in the data that, like, this story that someone was going to have to write about the game, the Bulls' first game of the year against, I don't even think the documentary
right.
announced
because,
the opponents.
Because who cares?
It who cares? Didn't matter.
Right.
Like, but that's what we thought sports journalism was. But if you look at the data, the people who read that are few and far between. They're the hardcore fans, and this is the reason that the sports part of the paper is the part that everyone knows, like, you can have it, because it's only for this tiny little sliver of people who follow this stuff really ardently, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Scottie Pippen's worked his whole life. He worked in a desk factory mm-hmm. and scarred up his arms, and he's like scrapped, and he's like, he got this thing, and then signed a long deal that committed him to a low salary, and now he's getting screwed because mm-hmm. of it, right? Right in front of all of us. This man's like dreams are breaking in front of us. That's what every movie's about, right? Yes. Like, mm-hmm. like, this is exactly, like, this is what the media needed to write about, mm-hmm. not because we're salacious assholes,
right.
but because we have to tell stories that people care about, and people don't care about your third quarter run, but mm-hmm. they do care about Scottie Pippen's heartbreaking. Right. Mm-hmm. And it did break, and it's still broken. And he's still going on documents like this, being pissed off about it. Right. So
correct.
So MJ got to pick the topic, and he picked one that was good for him. Well, and by the way, what did it save him? It saved him a second, mild little 2 seconds of soul searching. That's right. All. His stakes yeah. were very low. Mm-hmm. He could have just said, like, geez, I wish they would pay Scottie. Like, but he didn't.
Simple.
That was too much for him, right? So to me, I'm like, you know, this is what the NBA does too, right? Like, if you you know, they go to a lot of trouble to pick the topics, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that with All-Star Weekend, the topic that you're supposed to write about is how incredible the athletes are, how fast they run, how high they jump, how incredible they dunk. And that's where I feel like these like 50, 60, 70-year-old journalists who are all recording podcasts right now saying how shitty the weekend was, right? Like they're doing that a little bit right. because the only topic they're allowed to talk about is this little narrow thing. And even in that narrow lane, it sucks. Like they don't run fast and they don't jump right. high because they're fucking tired. But to me, I'm like,
and they're broken and hurt.
Yeah. Like we're just supposed to go, oh, it's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Like they're high schoolers who run faster, jump higher because they're so tired. Like,
correct. Correct. Yeah.
So that's, anyway, there you go. Probably enough lecture on that.
No. Listen, I am with you. No. I think this is important. Like we look. I forget who said it, right? Like in years past, it's like a famous saying that like sports is the toy department of the newsroom, right? That's always like the view of it, right? It's not serious. And it's like, okay, yes, compared to like bombing, yes, it is low on the priority list. Understood. However, human beings are involved in these stories. And yes, Scottie Pippen, that was immense heartbreak. And as you so well pointed out, it's evident because that heart's still broken. That's why MJ's not any good because he felt like this guy who I went to war with and we won these things together, who I thought was my brother in arms, has gone out of his way to not be my brother in arms. Oh, so that's how this works, huh? Okay.
And cool. It's like, you know, like when Michael was out, they won 55 games. Scottie Pippen, like we now know.
Could have won MVP that year.
In conventional box score stats, he was super elite. Mm-hmm. But now we know like this, like guard the other team's best player, mm-hmm. super rangy defender, mm-hmm. shoots threes. Like these players are like more valuable than we ever knew, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that Michael Jordan was better than Scottie Pippen.
Of course.
I think it was a lot closer than mm-hmm. everybody thought than real time, right? And he made, I mean, on the court, I'm going to say like 10x Scottie.
Yeah.
And like, easy. And off the court, oh. infinity x.
Right. Scottie, yeah, right? Not even a thing.
This is why Scottie's pissed off, right? Mm-hmm. Like it just seems like it was, I'm going to, it might have rightly been like, 70-30, 60-40, 55-45, but instead mm-hmm. it was like a little 90-10. Crumb for Scottie and the whole world, all these popes and presidents mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. everybody just lies down for the great Michael Jordan, right? I think mm-hmm. that could get on your nerves a little bit.
Well, listen, especially if you know intimate details about St. Michael Jordan, you're like, really? Yeah. That guy? Okay,
yeah.
Cool. I get it.
Yeah.
No, it's a lot in this game. It really is. And we talk about it, Henry, too, around the sport. There's a macho culture around it, right? And something that we try to break through a lot often and like just talk to with more nuance. It's like, guys, we're not cavemen. Like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to like act in that, oh, fire. Like, you can just actually speak like a human. Like, it's fine. Like, vulnerabilities, it's cool. Don't worry. Like, you're not soft. Like, it's, I promise, it's okay. And I say all that to bring up because we were talking about Sabrina and Steph mm-hmm. and Kane the Jet Smith said after the game, I'm paraphrasing, oh, you know, it was great, but I wish Sabrina had shot from the women's line. And I'm just like, first of all, and Andrew Marchand detailed this and on The Athletic, like talk about like just not understanding the moment. And this goes back to probably what you talked about, Henry, in terms of you love journalism and this is a profession and things that people work their lives towards. Someone who, and say whatever you want about Bob Costas or Ernie Johnson or people like that, but they are schooled in journalism and would recognize the moment and likely would not have made the statement, right? Because they would let it hang in the air and breathe because it, right? There's aspects you do for television. But Kenny as, well, I used to play basketball and whatever. If she shot from, I wish she would have shot from the women's line. Why, Kenny? She was leading with two shots in on his last rack and her score would have won the men's competition. Hello? Yeah. What are we doing?
Yeah, it was like the part that got me was, and here I'm just reading from Andrew's article, is there's a women's tea in golf and there's a men's tea for a reason.
God.
And it's just like, I would just say like, I don't know of anything. Like, I you know, I'm a regular guy. I go to the same places as people, you know, like I'll see a Costco, you know what I mean? Like, I don't go anywhere in my life ever that's as misogynist as the NBA, right? Like, this is, I mean, I don't know. Is there another entity on the planet that as of 2024 hasn't had a female leader of any significant kind whatsoever, right? We haven't had a coach. We haven't had a GM. We haven't mm-hmm. had a commissioner. Like we haven't like, you know, the army, we're behind the army. We're behind mm-hmm. like everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not a stretch to suggest that like a lot of the NBA sees women primarily as sexual objects, right? Great. Like, mm-hmm. Do you need me to provide evidence? Or are you just going to trust me on that one?
I have been around life long enough and been around this league long enough and dues long enough to know, yep, 100% fact.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a like that arena. When Sabrina is standing on that court, like the lower bowl of that arena is like has a fair number of prostitutes. Mm-hmm. And it has like, you know, like has men who will have a different woman tomorrow. Right? Like,
correct.
Fact. Just kind of like, you know, and some of them are NBA billionaires, right? Yeah. Like yeah, this is a profoundly, it's the most profoundly misogynistic place I know. It doesn't mean that there aren't strong women around. It doesn't mean that everyone's misogynist. It just means like, it's a place where you can't get very far from insisting people respect women, right? Like, and so, you know, there are stories of practically, well, don't get me started. Okay. So, but to me, like, it's not surprising that like a retired player given a mic and a lot of latitude to just say whatever would end up saying something like this. It could have been 10 times worse. I'm kind of surprised it wasn't, to
yeah.
be honest.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, I mean, it's a bummer. I just feel like it's, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about women's sports and yeah. watching women's sports. And like, yeah. it's like, we're just so behind in the NBA. Like, we're
just so behind. And it just, you know, and it's just the way that people often talk about, like the casual, like man on the street talks about women's sports, right? And again, it's from that standpoint of, because they're like, those they're the men you're talking about who they primarily view women as sexual objects, right? Or baby makers yeah. or people that cook food, right? So why would you be playing this? And I'm like, dude, do you have any idea how fucking good these women are? Like any yeah. clue, like any clue at all. Like they're so yeah. good. So good.
That's why we needed Sabrina to win.
Yeah, yeah. No, we God, we did. Oh, and it's funny because you kind of saw Steph like when she went, he was kind of like excited, but also like, shit, she's kind of on a run here. I got like, because when the person goes first and sets the bar, that's going to be in your head. Now, yes, Steph is elite, all that, but he's not immune to pressure. Like, he's like everyone else.
Yeah, everybody has off days. Yeah.
Right, and if he misses three in a row, and he sure had an off day on Sunday, missing a ton of threes in that game. Right. So yeah. like, it's just it, you know, that's just how this works. I find it all interesting and fascinating. I do wonder in that setup, because it's Kenny who said it. What if Barkley had said it? I wonder what if that, because he occupies such an interesting and unique space in sports culture and in popular culture and media. He almost has the most latitude to say whatever he wants. I mean, this is a man who famously refers to San Antonio women as big women, and it's everyone laughs. Yeah. And it's like, okay. You know, it's cool.
It matters more if he says it, I guess. But like, mm-hmm. he also is more, you know, he just like trips more. You know what I mean? Like,
it's good way to say it. Good way to say it. He just trips more. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just tripped. You know, and I guess we should a little bit shout out to Reggie Miller, right? Reggie Miller yes. pushed back a little bit. Mm-hmm. I forget. Mm-hmm. He actually, no, it says, he said, according to you, you want her to be playing with dolls. That nice, was pretty
Reggie.
Amazing.
Nice, Reggie. Yeah. I like it. Good one. Good that's one. Good on you.
An older sister, you know?
That's well, like, who used to routinely kick his ass in ball, right? Like, Reggie tells the best story. It was like, I think he had his like career high in high school in a game where he scored like, I don't know, right. like 47 points. And like, Charles, and then like, wait, why aren't you guys like, because your sister scored like 100. He's like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, hey, sister's better sorry. Than you. What do you want?
Sorry, I scored 100.
Sorry, I scored 100. Sorry, Reg.
In your 43-point game.
Still love you, little bro.
Yeah.
A couple other things from Adam's press conference. He talked about the G League Ignite. And I wrote a story about this league when it was coming out a few years ago for True Hoop. And I remember it was all very mysterious. I remember Brandon Greer, who I talked to for the stories and agents, like, it's just no one knew anything about it. It just came out of nowhere. And David can talk far more intelligently about this, but he will often tell us that the NBA does not have a monopoly on player development. And we see that, right? That team doesn't, they play a ton of games. They don't win a lot. You know, Josh Green.
Who were the alumni? Yeah. It's
Sharif Abdul-Rahim. Players who played. Josh Green, Scoot.
Scoot.
God, who else played in that league?
There's another one who's a pretty big yeah. name. Anyway, okay, sorry. That was a pop quiz. That's not my.
I know. No pop quizzes yeah. on the show. But yeah. but point is that they play
a Leonard ton of Hamilton.
Games. Oh, there you go. They play yeah. a ton of games. But are they actually getting better at basketball? But that was how it was sold, right? Sharif told me, like, who's better at understanding the NBA than people who play in the NBA? I go, I don't know if that's exactly right. Like, I mean, David didn't play in the NBA, and he has lots of success coaching NBA players. I don't think that needs to be a prerequisite. And anyway, with college NIL deals that now exist, the G League Ignite system might be shuttering, because part of the reason, the big draw was, well, I can go right to the pros, right? A pro system, an academy-like system, and I don't have to worry about this college academic stuff, and I can get paid. Well, you can get paid at college now with an NIL deal. And, I mean, maybe NCAA, I would say there definitely are programs that are better at developing players than G League Ignite, for sure. That's factual. Maybe players start doing that. So I think Adam saying we're not sure what the future of that program holds, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. And like, I mean, it sucks, right? It's the problem. Like, this year's team is 2-18, mm-hmm. I think. And, you know, David could come on this podcast on Thursday and list like 50 people who are amazing at player development. I'm sure mm-hmm. he would say the words Ryan Pinone a lot, right?
Yes.
I could make a smaller list, but I know a lot of these people, right? Charlie Torres was on this show, correct. Right?
Yes, we had him on.
There's a bunch of these people who like literally like live out of their cars in some cases. One guy lived on a boat. Mm-hmm. Ross McMaines is the name you hear. These dudes are like lifers of like, oh, I noticed that you're doing this little thing with your elbow when you shoot, right? Like, none of those people got jobs with the G League Ignite. I'm not saying that I know all the best people. I'm just saying, like, it feels like to me, if you were in this very small world that we work in, mm-hmm. if you were collecting screening for the purposes of elite player development, you probably would have caught somebody David knew.
Right? No, I agree.
Like, in your net. But instead it was like very, I mean, I don't know. The complaint I heard when it was new was that it was like kind of a setup to steer stars to Aaron Goodwin. Right, like Sharif Abdurrahim was mm-hmm. Aaron Goodwin guy, and a lot of the key people seemed to be approved by Aaron Goodwin. That deal was, and I think Jalen Green did end up with Aaron Goodwin.
I believe so.
But so when you're not honestly trying to make it about player development, then you might not succeed at that. And I think, in fact, like those three players, Scoot Henderson, Jalen Green, and Leonard Hamilton, are I think probably just the absolute poster children of like physically super gifted and entirely in need of player development after reaching the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. They were maybe the most poorly developed players. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. if you were looking to just get better at basketball, you would probably go to any of the other options, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, like, this is the problem. If they had arrived like Victor did, right? Like, Victor went to minor league France mm-hmm. and got developed way the fuck better, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's ready to play. Chet Holmgren spent a year like watching mm-hmm. from the sidelines and developed better.
He's really good.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. like this is not the best system. Like, it's just not, it just didn't go well. If it went well, they wouldn't be talking about canceling it, right? They just aren't good at it. That's all. Like, sorry, guys. They gave you a bunch of money. You didn't turn it into making players better.
Sorry, guys. It didn't work. Sorry. No. It's this thing, though, right? Where the assumption being that, it's like we talked about with Kenny, right? Oh, put an ex-player on the mic. Do that. It's like, but there are people who actually work their lives to be good. Because this is a different skill set, right? Playing in the NBA is a very different skill than coaching in the NBA, than teaching in the NBA, than GMing in the, right? Yes, you understand the, understood, no doubt about that. But can you then translate all that you know into making this person better? No? Well, that's coaching, right? Like, well, then you're not good.
Yeah. It's super competitive. I mean, it's a super competitive world that we live in, and like, and there's a lot of money at stake. And you know, the person who's best at player development isn't someone who just thought about player development starting last year, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. you know, I mean, David's been doing this forever,
right?
Right, and he has mm-hmm. so many. You know, he had a client recently start missing free throws a little bit, and he mm-hmm. like was like tearing his hair out because he was watching all this video trying to figure out like what it was. And then like a little light bulb went off, and he was like, "It's this," and then he fixed it. And you know, how many problems can you solve is like a reasonable question. This is a question for a doctor, right? Mm-hmm. Is like, what kind of sick people can come in here and you can have them leave feeling better, right? Like, that's a question for a player development coach. And I think if you're new to it, like, it's unlikely you're going to have a long list of wins, right? And like, why can't Leonard Hamilton get minutes right now, right? Like, remember David about Leonard Hamilton before the draft? He was like, I love this guy, right? Man. Like, he's got a body from basketball heaven, right? But like, but he just needs to learn basketball more. Right. Like, even though he just took a year or 2 years, a year, I think.
and didn't learn much.
Like an academy of this run by the NBA, and it wasn't good enough. You know,
yeah, no, it's a different skill set. You know, we talked about European football to start the show, right? They have academy systems. That's how they do things over there, right? And even they don't even get it right all the time, right? They're really bad at it, right? Like it's not easy. It's a different type of skill, and it's hard work. And as you said, you've had to have studied this, like made it your life's mission. Dude, this is what I want to do to solve all these problems.
There's no stakes, right? Like if you're like in charge of player development for Chelsea and you have 14-year-olds, then mm-hmm. like, and if you aren't getting them stars, you're fired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But in this G League Ignite thing, like if Scoot gets to Portland and he doesn't know how to read the pick and roll, like, do we even know the name of the person who sucked at that? Like, there we go. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Whatever. Next. Like, we'll get some more Scoots in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly right. No, this is the nature of things. Some NBA news came down, Henry, before we got on. The Nets just fired Jacques Vaughn.
Saw that.
They just extended him beginning of last year through 26-27. Look, this team is 11 games under 500. They're 2.5 out of the play-in right now. That's what they want to do. They want to make the play-in. They're going to give a whole lot of song and dance about, we're not sure if Jacques can, stars want to play for Jacques. I don't know. Kevin Durant seemed fine playing for Jacques Vaughn, so I don't know if that's it. Like, again, this league is difficult. Being a head coach is difficult. I know there was some tension between him and Cam Thomas. I know fans wanted him to play Cam Thomas more, and you'll love this, Henry, as the Cam Thomas skeptic on this podcast.
I don't know where this is going.
Yeah. He wanted Cam to play defense better, and I've talked about it. Cam seems uninterested on that side of the floor, if I'm being kind, right? But I don't know what's going on over here. So that was a problem, despite the fact that he is an elite offensive talent. You know, but the game.
I mean, he's pretty good.
Nice. Got to throw what his Cam Thomas did. But as David said, maybe his best role in this league is super six man off the bench. You know, you just come in and cook second units. That's all I want you to do. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you can't read the game, if you can't make all the right choices, then like all you get to do is just flamethrow, you know,
which he will love to flamethrow. So they'll announce an interim coach, and then I guess they'll figure out who their next head coach is. I will say this. Sean Marks, this is year 8 or 9 in Brooklyn. Your fourth head coach you're going on? Questions, right? What's the plan here, Sean? What are we doing?
People love him. Like, and he's blatantly super smart.
But, and he comes from the Spurs organization, the Spurs halo effect, too. Yeah,
Spurs halo effect. They're in this thing now, though, right, where they're like big expectations, pretty big budget, and mediocre results. Like, that's one of the scariest, because, like, there might not be a smoking gun. There might not be a broken thing. It might just be that you're just not that good, right? Like
that could be it. And then what do you do, right? If this is your whole life and you built, and it just turns out, okay, I'm not, because then it's like, well, then, now what do I do, right? You have to pivot. And it's like, well, to what?
I mean, I do. It seems like the, like, you know, Mikal Bridges untouchable thing is like, well, why?
Yeah.
Why you got to hang on to this guy's prime?
Agreed.
To not miss the playoffs. You know what I mean?
correct. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, Bridges is good, but I didn't understand the moves at all. Unless, hey, he might have a smoking gun for all we know, and this summer Donovan Mitchell's coming, and then all things are great. Maybe. I don't know, but
that'd be fun. It'd be fun if Brooklyn had an incredible team. Like for Brooklyn, for the borough of Brooklyn, that'd be fun.
Yes,
you know?
It's nice. They can battle with the Knicks again. Listen, when Durant and Kyrie and James were here and they were kicking the Knicks' ass, I'm like, that was fun because Knicks fans were pissed. It was great. You had a nice little thing going on. Now
they should humiliate James Dolan out of the league. then that would be like a win-win. The Knicks fans get what they want. Like, it's just, it'd be beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love it. I love it. All right, folks. Thank you for joining us today. That was a good discussion. I wanted to really talk about All-Star and, you know,
curse.
Yeah. And just also like just the larger, this is the league, right? And the things that actually matter. Don't get confused by the stuff they're actually telling you. Look a little deeper. Or as Henry likes to say, and I do appreciate this about you, look, if you just want to tune out for 2.5 hours and watch ball, then don't give a shit about anything we just said. Then
yeah,
you just spoon in. But if you're really going to be like, I'm doing this, well, maybe you want to start asking some questions. Like,
thanks, Joe. Sure.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Thanks for having me.